We began a new Chumash, and it's interesting that the Netziv points out in his introduction that every Chumash has a nickname except for the book of Shmos. That is, the book of Bereishis is called by Chazal Sefer HaYashor, the book of the upright, and the book of Vayikra is called Toras Kohanim, the laws of the Kohanim. And the book of Bamidbor is called Chumash HaPikudim, the book of census, counting. And the book of Devarim is called Mishneh Torah, the repetition of the Torah, because Moshe repeats much of the Torah before he dies. The only nickname that the book of Shmos is given is Chumash HaSheni. It's the second Chumash. That's not much of a nickname. That just says the second Chumash. But the Netziv says that that's a very good name, because essentially what Shmos is about is part two of Bereishis. Bereishis is the book of creation, the creation of the world, and kind of the prehistory of the Jewish people. But Shmos is the creation of the Jewish people, which is really the very purpose of the creation of the world. As the first Rashi, or the second Rashi in Chumash says, because of Yisrael, that is called Reishis, that's Bereishis Bara Elokim. And instead of translating it, in the beginning God created, it is understood by the Medrash, because of those things that are called Reishis, beginning, God created the world, and two things are called Reishis. One is called the Torah, and one is called Am Yisrael, and that was the very purpose of the creation of the world. And therefore, the book of Bereishis, the book of Shmos, which talks about the creation of Am Yisrael through Yetzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, and building a Mishkan, which is bringing the divine presence into their heart and their soul, is really part two of creation, because it is why the world was created to begin with. It's important to note that although this is not yet Pesach, we have a while till Pesach, so don't panic, but it is brought down that the divine light of Yetzias Mitzrayim does exist in microcosm during the Parshios of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And one has to understand that Yetzias Mitzrayim is about liberation. The Sfas Emes writes that the meaning of Mitzrayim is not simply a nation, ancient Egypt, but Mitzrayim refers to limitations, boundaries, constrictions, constraints. As David HaMelech says, Min ha-meitzar karasika, from my narrow, constricting place I call out to God. And every single person has a Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim could be our gaiva, it could be our selfishness, our anger, it could be our lack of self-esteem, appreciation for our value, laziness, whatever it might be, lashon hara. Every person has something within them that is blocking them, that is preventing them from fully connecting to Hashem. And the koach of Yetzias Mitzrayim is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes available a spiritual power that can liberate us from that which enslaves us. So the Mekubalim teach us that the cause and effect is really reversed. We think that Pesach is Pesach because we were taken out of Mitzrayim. Not true. We were taken out of Mitzrayim because it was Pesach. Meaning to say, there is a, by definition, Hashem put into certain times of the year a spiritual power which will manifest itself in particular historical events. But even when we don't have a Yetzias Mitzrayim, you know, literally, that power makes itself available again and again and again. And as I indicated, during these weeks in particular, we can experience some of the Pesach liberation without some of the responsibilities of getting rid of chametz, in the sense that we can tap into that energy. The Maral says, this is why the Torah makes such a big point that Pesach has to be during the spring. In fact, the whole calendar is based on this, because as you know, a solar calendar, 12 solar months, a solar revolution around the earth, or the earth revolving around the sun, however you want to describe it, is 365 and a fourth days, approximately. 365, 366, every 4 years we have a leap year. A lunar calendar, the Jewish calendar was based on the moon revolving around the earth, is only 354 or 355 days. So there is an 11-day difference between a lunar year and a solar year. And that would mean, therefore, that every Jewish holiday, without an adjustment, will be 11 days earlier in the secular calendar. So if for 1 year Pesach is April 10 or April 15, next year it'll be April 1st, then the year after it'll be March 20th, and the like. Now eventually, therefore, in a pure lunar calendar, Pesach is going to be moved earlier and earlier and earlier till eventually it will be in the middle of the winter. Now the Torah says you're not allowed to make Pesach in the winter, because Pesach is described as having to take place b'chodesh aviv, in the spring. So in order to push Pesach back into the spring, our calendar is set up, as you know, so that 7 years out of 19, we have an extra month called Adar Sheni, which pushes Pesach further into the year, so it'll always be in the spring. Unlike, for example, the Islamic calendar, which is also a lunar calendar, but without an adjustment of a leap month. So that is why the fast of Ramadan, which is the ritual that most of us know about, that could be any time of year. Ramadan can be in the summer, which then, of course, it's very tough because it's a fast in the hot summer and a long day. Or Ramadan can be in the winter, which makes it much easier. Maybe that's why they don't have an adjustment to keep Ramadan in the summer or whatever it would be. Now, the Maharal asks the Kasha, what's the big deal? Why is it so important to have Pesach in the spring? After all, if Pesach is commemorating its Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that occurred the 15th of Nisan, so whenever the 15th of Nisan is when we have Pesach. Like, what's the, you know, like people complain, Rosh Hashanah is early this year. Well, Rosh Hashanah is never early. It's always the first of Tishrei. What do you mean early? It's no earlier than it was the year before, right? Pesach is not early. It's the 15th of Nisan. So the Maharal says no, because this is, you have to understand the intimate connection between what happens in the physical world and the spiritual energies and kochos that Hashem is putting into the Bria. The world responds physically because of the spirituality that Hashem is infusing in the universe at that given moment in time. Spring is spring, right? Where the ground becomes liberated from its enslavements, where there's fertility, where there's growth, where there's new opportunity. Because the earth itself is reflecting the spiritual powers of redemption and rejuvenation. So if you make Pesach when that isn't happening, you're not able to tap into that spiritual energy. That's why it has to correlate with the season. Now you might say, well, how does that work for Australia, where, you know, South Africa, where the seasons are reversed? Well, once again, spiritual power comes into the world via Eretz Yisrael. So it is the spring in Eretz Yisrael, so even Antarctica in the South Pole will get all of that energy because everything comes from here, right? I didn't say New York, although it happens to be the same latitude, but it comes via Eretz Yisrael, not New York or Baltimore. Okay, all right, so this is why these parshiyos are very, very important. I mean, they're important for so many reasons. Number one, Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, which we'll read about in a few weeks, are the formative experiences that made us an Am Yisrael. But number two, there's an idiosyncratic meaning that each of us has to identify our own Mitzrayim and then seek Hashem's help in liberating us from that which enslaves us. Now, what's fascinating is the Haftorah for Shmos, there are actually three different minhagim for the Haftorah of Shmos. There's Ashkenazim, there are Svardim, and for some reason most Chumashim don't give you the third one, but there's also Temanim, which have a third one. And it's interesting that these are representative of the three big Nevi'im. The Minhag Ashkenaz is from Yeshayahu, the Minhag Svarad is Yirmiyahu, and the Minhag of the Temanim is Yecheskel, right? So the three big Nevi'im are represented here. And in truth, the one that has the most connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim is the Teimoni Haftarah from Yechezkel. And yet, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit, simply because that's the one that you didn't see in your Chumash yesterday, unless you're a Teimoni. And that is, and yet, this is also the one Haftarah where there's a Gemara that says you shouldn't even read it as a Haftarah. Again, the Teimonim have a different interpretation. And this is in Yechezkel. And this is in, remember the time frame here. Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu, their lives overlap. They were contemporaries. But their nevuos came in two different places. Yirmiyahu was the Navi who actually lived in Eretz Yisrael and experienced the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Yechezkel had been exiled to Babylonia 11 years before the Chorban, in the first wave of the Talmidei Chachamim and the aristocracy. Mordechai, for example, was in that first wave. And Yechezkel is getting his nevuos in Bavel, which is very unusual, that he gets, in a way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to communicate that the Shekhinah is with us in Golus, that even though in Golus. And Yechezkel, however, is also given nevuos to be sent to the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And in one of his nevuos, which is the most bitter denunciation, it begins with, Hoda es Yerushalayim es tov haseha. Make known to Jerusalem the abominations, the ugliness of the inhabitants. And he goes on and describes all sorts of averos that were being done in very graphic terms. And according to one opinion in the Gemara Megillah, this Haftorah is so bitter and denunciatory that it shouldn't even be read, and indeed, it is our minhag essentially not to read it as a Haftorah. But the Teimonim do have it as the Haftorah for Parsha Shmos. And what's very interesting is, in fact, some of the Pesukim in that Haftorah are very familiar to you. Because after that bitter denunciation, Hashem describes, how could you be so ungrateful for all that I've done for you? And he describes the Jewish people in Mitzrayim as an abandoned baby that is left lying in the street, covered with filth and blood and its own excrement, and nobody caring about it. And Hashem says, and I took you, and I diapered you, and I cleaned you, and I raised you, and I took you out. And this is that famous pasuk that we say at every bris, and we also say in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, Ve'evor alayach, I passed over you. Ve'erech misboseses bedamayach, I saw you swimming in your blood. Ve'omar lach, and I said to you, bedamayach chayi, with your blood you shall live. Now again, be sure you understand the Pshuto Shel Mikra, then we'll look at the Midrash. The Pshuto Shel Mikra is, the blood is describing filth and dirt, and basically you're just covered in all sorts of things, and Hashem says, in spite of your blood, I will give you life. That, right, that is the Pshuto Shel Mikra. The Drash of Chazal is that it refers to the fact that when the Jews were in Mitzrayim, they were so sinful. They were on the 49th level of Tumah, and they were sinking fast. But Hashem gave us two mitzvahs that gave us a little bit of a zechus so we would be redeemed. One is the blood of Bris Milah, which the Jews didn't do for all the years of Mitzrayim except for the tribe of Levi. And the other is the blood of the Korban Pesach. And Chazal's drasha is because Damayech, as opposed to Damech, Damayech is Lashon Rabin. By your bloods you will live. And this is Dam Pesach, V'dam Milah. And that's why we read this pasuk both in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, and we recite it at a Bris Milah, V'damayech Chayi. Right, so that's a very famous pasuk, and in the middle of this Haftorah that is so bitter and denunciatory that Chazal actually indicated not to read it. Again, how the Teimonim get around that is an interesting technical question. the Taimanim do incorporate it precisely because of this. And then it goes through a metaphor which contemporary sensibilities might be a little uncomfortable with, but it does describe the fact how Kav Yachal, this little abandoned baby that was picked up, Hashem falls in love with. He says, you grew into someone of charm, someone of beauty, someone of grace. And I took you unto me as a betrothed. And the concept, once again, is that's Matan Torah. That is compared to a chasna, a wedding. So Yetzias Mitzrayim is like taking an abandoned, filthy infant and raising them to maturity. And then we have the 49 days of the Omer, which we purify ourselves. We grow into charm and beauty and holiness. And then God says, we have a chasna, we have a wedding at Matan Torah. Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Right. That's right. You know, all I'm saying is it's a mixed imagery in the sense that it begins with kind of adopting a baby, and then it morphs into a marriage. Again, according to halakha, by the way, I want to say, as strange as this would sound, actually, according to strict halakha, there's actually no prohibition. I mean, theoretically, since adoption does not confer, you know, blood relationship, according to halakha, a person is allowed to marry an adopted child. Again, that's a little bizarre, but be it as it may, the imagery once again is Yetzias Mitzrayim, helpless as a baby. Matan Torah, the beauty of a chasna. In fact, as you know, Sfardim have a minhag, Taimanim have a minhag, maybe it's connected to this, that, you know, Ashkenazim read before the Kriyas HaTorah and Shavuos a poem of Akdamas, which is an Aramaic poem that talks about the glory of Hashem. The Sfardim, many Sfardim read a Kesuva. They actually have it's written like a Kesuva, but it's a Kesuva with Hashem as the chasan, and Bnei Yisrael the Kala. So it's Mamish taking the language of a Ksuva and modifying it to reflect the marriage contract between God and the Jewish people. Yeah.
Does the blood on the doorpost have anything to do with this?
Yes, that's what I mean. In other words, the two bloods. So one is the blood of circumcision, and one is the blood of the Korban Pesach that was put on the doorpost. That's Bidamayach with your bloods. So that is the Taimani Haftorah. And it also describes Pesach in particular as Eis Dodim, which is a time of love. And that's also the makor of why we read Shir HaShirim after the Seder. Again, as I say, although the marriage itself didn't take place until Matan Torah, but Yetzias Mitzrayim itself was expressive of a very great and deep love. In many ways, L'chara, the Haftorah is kind of contradictory because the Haftorah has bitter denunciations. But in many ways, l'havdil, even in human relationships, we know that the stronger the love, the more painful is betrayal. And indeed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is basically, l'havdil, or Kav Yachal, crying in pain over how we have betrayed him, how we have let him down with all the love that he showed us, all the care that he showed us. How could we turn against him? And this is what another Navi says as well. He says, I have chosen you from all the nations of the world, and that is why you are punished the most. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares the most about Am Yisrael. So this is the Haftarah of the Taimanim, and its connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim is very evident, because it literally is describing the Exodus as HaKadosh Baruch Hu finding an abandoned child that nobody wanted and raising the child with love and concern. To go backwards, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
This parallel is very much with Hosea.
Yes, about the Zona, the Gomer. Zona. Yeah.
And then
right.
It goes far with Satir.
Right, it's very, very similar. That's correct. Of course, with Hosea, the lesson moves in a little bit the opposite direction, and that is Hosea was kind of telling Hashem, forget about these Jews, they're unfaithful. They're like a woman who's committed adultery. So he tells Hosea to marry such a woman, and then when she's Mazana, he can't get rid of her. So Hashem says, I can't get rid of the Jewish people. You know, I'm stuck. I'm in love with them, right? Okay. Now, going backwards, the next Haftorah, the Sfardic Haftorah, and I'm again, some of you may have heard this yesterday, but probably more and more heard the Ashkenazic of Torah, is the first parak of Yirmiyahu. Now, this is a little odd, and the reason it's a little odd is this Haftorah is read one other time in the year. Sometimes Haftorahs are repeated. And this is the first of the Haftorahs of the 3 weeks. It is an ominous Haftorah. It's a Haftorah of Chorban. It is a Haftorah where Yirmiyahu is given his mission to prophesy about the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. It introduces, it inaugurates the 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av. So, that's an odd juxtaposition. Shemos, which is, you know, Yetzias Mitzrayim, at least the beginning of the story of liberation, why should it have the Haftorah of destruction? So we'll come to that. I'll just show you briefly what the connection is. Yirmiyahu, we've talked about, in many ways, on a personal level, is the most tragic of the Nevi'im. In fact, the book of Yirmiyahu is so interesting because we know much more about his personal internal feelings than we know about any other Navi. For example, Yeshayahu never talks about himself that much. No Navi talks about himself. It's just the message. Yirmiyahu is the one very, very interesting exception where he does talk about himself. He talks about the pain that he has in his shlichus. He talks about the fact that he asked Hashem, take away the job as a Navi. He doesn't want to be the one that will prophesy Chorban and suffering. He asks Hashem to take his life because this is too much for him to bear. According to many traditions in the Medrash, Yirmiyahu never married because his mission was so consuming and so burdensome and so emotionally devastating. He was not able to even have a family. Now, he, of course, is the one Navi, in a way, and some point this out, he was a reversal of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he points out, the Medrash points out that he actually said this to Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu took the Jews from slavery and persecution to freedom, although Moshe didn't make the final trip himself. Yirmiyahu has the mission of undoing what Moshe Rabbeinu did, take them from freedom to Gullus. Now, in many ways, this might in fact be the hint of why the Sephardim put this in as the Haftorah, because the point basically is this: when we read about our liberation and our freedom, we might become arrogant, we might become smug, we might feel, oh, Baruch Hashem, I no longer have that to face anymore. So I need Yirmiyahu to say, hey, whatever you got by Yetzias Mitzrayim is reversible. It's a reversible process because Yirmiyahu is given the nevuah of reversal. So it might very well be that the purpose of the Haftarah is contrast, to remind us, don't think your freedom is absolutely guaranteed. There, remember Golos and Churban. That's one aspect. Another comparison to the Parsha is that just as Moshe Rabbeinu was the reluctant Navi, right? Moshe argues with Hashem over and over and over again. Send somebody else. I'm not worthy. He invents every excuse in the book. He says, they're not worthy. I'm not worthy. Paro won't listen to me. I don't talk well. Everything keeps on coming up with every different type of excuse. And Hashem keeps on telling him, they're worthy, and you're worthy, and Aaron can talk for you, and I'll give you the special words that will convince people. And I'll even tell you ahead of time, Paro himself will not listen to you, so don't get discouraged. I'm telling you ahead of time that this is the Talich. So Yirmiyahu too says to Hashem, I'm not worthy. So now that seems to be less of a significant connection, but some of us do point out that this is an example of the reluctance Navi. Of course, one can understand that Yirmiyahu's reluctance perhaps has almost a better reason. He's the Navi of Chorban. But ultimately, at the end of Yirmiyahu, at the end of the Haftorah rather, there are two psukim that talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And these two psukim liberated this Haftorah. And we don't read this during the 3 weeks. Meaning, I said, this Haftorah is the same as the 3 weeks. except for the last two verses, which are again very famous verses. One of them even makes the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah as one of the Zichronos, one of the verses of sweet remembrance. Haloch v'karasa b'azne Yerushalayim lemor. Go and proclaim into the ears of the inhabitants of Yerushalayim. Yirmiyahu lived in Yerushalayim. Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Yudke Vavke is the name of mercy. Zacharti lach chesed ne'urayach. I remember the loving kindness you showed me in your youth, when you were young. Avas kalulosayach. Again, the wedding imagery. The love that a bride shows for her husband. Lech teich acharai bamidbar. You followed me into the desert. Be'eretz lo zarua. In a land that has not been planted. A desolate, empty land. And now this has been set to music and the like. Beautiful nigunim. But imagine, this pasuk is an amazing thing. Hashem is thanking us for following him into the desert. Now, you figure, you know, we're in Egypt. We have persecution. People are being killed. Slavery. Beaten. And now we have the opportunity to be free. It's really, Hashem is doing us the favor, really. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his chesed, not only takes us out, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is grateful to us. Thank you for having faith. Talk about seeing people l'kaf suchus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically says, thank you for trusting me. Thank you for following me. I know it's not easy. Even to leave slavery is not easy. Because, in fact, this is the, you know, this is known as the, there must be an older term for it, but this is known as the Patty Hearst syndrome. And there actually is a technical, psychological term for it, or Stockholm syndrome, connected to that. And that's the notion that sometimes when people are kidnapped, or people are subjugated, or people have been enslaved, even if you throw the door open, they don't want to go. Fear of the unknown. The Ibn Ezra talks about slave mentality. The Ibn Ezra makes the point a few places. Why the Redeemer of the Jewish people had to be somebody who did not grow up as a slave. Moshe Rabbeinu grew up as an independent free man. Because a slave would not be able to have the strength and the courage to do this. As Chazal say, Ein chavush materatzum reisasurim, a person in prison cannot get himself out of jail. The Ibn Ezra points out, that's why by Kriyas Yamsuf, when you had 600,000 men, plus the women and people younger than 20, and there's only 600 chariots of Paro, they're terrified. Why are they terrified? They have more than 1,000 number of Paro's men. The Ibn Ezra says, because when the master comes looking for you, the slave loses courage. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu praises the Jewish people for their selflessness in following him into the desert. And the reference of Chesed Nurayich is very beautiful as well, because it is said that between a husband and a wife, if their relationship is a good relationship, so even if they've been married for so many years, when one looks, one sees the young person that joined them. One sees the Mesiras Nefesh, the commitment, the care. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and this is Yirmiyahu talking, you've been through a lot. You've done many bad things. You've rebelled. You've betrayed. You've sinned. But I will always remember that youthful commitment of following me in the Midbar. So this kind of redeems the Haftorah in a sense. I mean, the bulk of the Haftorah is Yirmiyahu is told that he's given a few pictorial symbols, interestingly enough. He first sees an almond tree, which is shaked. Now, shaked is also a term that means to hurry up, do something very, very diligently, quickly, without waste. And that is because the almond is actually the first tree whose fruit ripens. So it's called shaked. It comes quick. So he says, I'm showing you a shaked because the galus is going to come quickly. This is the end already. It's going to come. And then he shows him a boiling pot, a cauldron, which is boiling over. And it's boiling over from the north, meaning the pot is to the north and it's coming from the north. And he says, yes. Mitzafon tipasachara. It is from the north, Babylonia, which is northeast of Eretz Israel. It is from the north that the evil will come. In fact, isn't interesting? The Gemara says in Maseches Gittin, I'll tell you a little thought about Das Torah. How do you know, the Gemara says, how do you know that Babylonia is to the north of Israel? We have a pasuk that the evil will come from the north, and since the Korban came from Bavel, we know that Bavel is to the north of Eretz Israel. So the Balei Musar asked the Kasha, you have to ask a question, how do you know? I mean, I can ask, how do you know Canada is north of the United States? I mean, it's a map, you know it. You have to ask Akasha, how do you know Bavel is north of Eretz Yisrael? So the Balei Musar say, we think that a map is better than a pasuk. So we think, I don't need a pasuk if I have a map. He says, no, the pasuk is better than the map. Meaning to say, if you had a map that put Bavel to the south, but the pasuk says Bavel's to the north, your map is wrong. In other words, it's kind of a notion that Chazal considered the absolute highest standard of reliability is what the Torah or what the Nevi'im say, much more than what you know empirically. Okay, so that's kind of the Svardic take on it. So I suggested three reasons why this might be an appropriate Haftorah. One, by way of contrast, to remind us, don't think Yetzias Mitzrayim is a one-way street in which your freedom is guaranteed. The process, God forbid, can be reversed and has been reversed. So we have to be careful in terms of tshuva and ma'asim tovim to be zocha to Hashem's redemption. In this connection, let me just point out that sometimes people say, again, chas v'shalom, and it should never be, is it a guaranteed thing that the state of Israel will survive? So the argument that people say is, well, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us there will only be two galuses and there will not be a third galus, therefore by definition there cannot be a third galus. Well, unfortunately, that's not true. Well, the statement is true, but the application is not true. Because technically, we're not out of the second galus yet. Meaning to say, until there's a Bineis HaMikdash, we are still in the middle of the second galus. In the middle of the second galus of the Romans, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or the end, eventually the answer is the end of it, Hashem gave us a way station, a place to live, a place where we can build ourselves up spiritually and materially. But we're not out of galus yet. And since we're not out of galus yet, then if God forbid things would be reversed, it would not be a third galus, it would just be the second galus. Which means, in other words, we are not, nothing is a done deal. And that's why one has to be very careful. In other words, it's almost as if one might say, and different gedolim have hinted to it, some have been more befeirish, that the gradual losing of territory here and there and here and there, whether it's Hebron, whether it's Gush Katif, all these different things, even Yerushalayim, God forbid, is up for grabs, at least on paper, is maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message to us. Do not take Eretz Yisrael for granted. Do not take anything for granted. Everything requires tshuva, ma'asim tovim, love for Eretz Yisrael, avas Yisrael. And that's the only way we keep the matanos that Hashem gives us. And Hashem gives us lessons very gradually. In other words, not a big catastrophe, but chipping away here, there, here, there, here, there, to say, you still have time. We still have time. Right? So this is, again, what the Haftorah might be telling us. So that's one lesson. Remember the reversibility of things. The second is simply the dimion to the unwilling prophets, like Moshe Rabbeinu. And the third is the beautiful comfort at the end of this nevuah of Hashem remembering the Chesed Ne'urayach, which of course is totally connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. Now, we then move backwards to the Haftarah that most of us heard yesterday. And this is the Haftarah of Yeshayahu. As you know, we said a number of times already, Yeshayahu is the earliest of the Nevi'im. And Yeshayahu was actually prophesying even before the exile of the 10 tribes, which was more than 100 years before the Churban. And the king in whose reign he is prophesying happens to be a very righteous king, Chizkiyahu, Melech Yehuda, but vis-a-vis the 10 tribes up north, they are still very corrupt, and Yeshayahu is prophesying their destruction. Now, there is not a lot in this Haftarah, interestingly enough, that is directly connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim, but some connect it this way. If you look at the very first pasuk, Haba'im, those who come, right? Eila Shmos B'nai Yisrael, Haba'im, right? Haba'im, Yashresh Yaakov. Yaakov will take root. Yotzitz Ufarach Yisrael. Yisrael will flower and or blossom and flower. Umalu P'nei Tevel Tenuva. And the earth will be filled with tenuva. We're not referring to kadashis here, but tenuva means produce. So there's an agricultural metaphor here that a root starts off with a seed that is submerged in the ground. Nobody sees it. It's insignificant. And not only is it insignificant, but people, unbeknownst, trample on it. It's in the dirt, literally. And this is so according to the Medrash, now again, Pshuta Shel Mikra is Lav Davka, in other words, but according to the Medrash, this is describing the Jewish people who came down to Mitzrayim. The Medrash makes a connection between Haboim, and the Shoresh means we came, Yaakov itself means heel, right? That's the name of Yaakov Avinu that is used when the Jewish people are in a lowly and oppressed state. And we started off as an insignificant root. But in Mitzrayim, we flowered and blossomed into a great people. And we filled the earth, right? Again, these are Lashonos, Umalai Kol Haaretz, Batimalai Kol Haaretz Osam. We filled with tenuva as beautiful produce. Again, it's using an agricultural metaphor to describe the fertility and blessing that Hashem brought to the Jewish people. So that's one, that is one connection. Another connection is another famous pasuk, which is also the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, in the section called Shofros, in pasuk Yud Gimel, V'haya b'yomahu, it shall be on the day of final redemption, Yitoka b'shofor gadol, Hashem will blow the great and mighty shofar. And this is the source of the phrase in davening, Tika b'shofar gadol l'cheiruseinu. And what will happen on that day? Uvo ha'ovdim b'eretz Ashur. Those who have been destroyed in the land of Assyria. Now that's a specific reference to the exiles of the 10 tribes. V'hanidachim, and those who were pushed aside or rejected in the land of Egypt. Now this could either refer, according to the Medrash, to the 4/5 of the Jews who died during the plague of darkness, or it might refer to the Dor HaMidbor, although they didn't die in Egypt per se, but the generation of the Midbor died over the 40 years, and Hashem is saying, even they will be part of the redemption. Even they will be Zoche to Techiyas HaMesim. V'yishtachavu l'Hashem b'har HaKodesh. And they will bow down to Hashem in the holy mountain of Yerushalayim. So again, there's a great message of hope. You see, the Nevi'im speak in contradictions here, but the contradictions are ultimately, they try to create a holistic view. On one hand, Yirmiyahu's Haftarah is reminding you, don't take Hashem's blessings for granted. They could be reversible. On the other hand, even when there's punishment, Hashem's rachamim will come at the end as well. That even those who are oveid and nidach, Ovei destroyed Anidach, I'll actually give you a difference that, for that in a moment, will eventually have a kiyum. They'll eventually be brought back to God. Now, it's interesting. I think Rav Tzadok says that these two expressions, Ha'ovdim me'eretz Ashur, v'hanidochim be'eretz Mitzrayim. Now, the word Oved, which is translated destroyed, also comes from the same word to be lost. So he says homiletically the following thoughts. Again, it's homiletical, but it's a nice breakup of the two thoughts here. Ashur, which means Assyria, is also a term for happiness. Ashrei. So, Ovdim be'eretz Ashur are those Jews who are lost because of their complacency and their hedonism. In other words, they are so involved in the physical pleasures of the world that their souls are lost. They have no spiritual connection with God. Nidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, as I said before, can refer to people who are limited. And that means they feel trapped. It's the opposite. The Ashur is the one who is so carefree. Got nothing to worry about. What? Me worry. But don't worry, be happy, whatever it is. That's the carefree hedonist, is Ha'ovdim Me'eretz Ashur. Nidachim is the broken, depressed, despondent person who feels trapped in their lives. And Hashem is saying, I will give both of them redemption. I will allow the hedonist to understand what life is about. And I will liberate the broken person so they will see the joy in Avodas Hashem. Right? So those are the two, right? The Ovdim be'eretz Ashur, Nidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. Right? And they both will eventually come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, so that once again is a very good reason to put it in the Haftarah, because what it's telling you is the point I made at the very beginning, that Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just a one-time occurrence, but it is the prototype for Hashem redeeming us again and again and again, individually as well as collectively. In fact, the Vilna Gaon writes that all Gullus comes only because we didn't complete the process of being in Mitzrayim. You know, Hashem told Avraham we were supposed to be in Mitzrayim 400 years. Hashem took us out after 210 years, because had we stayed another 190 years, had we stayed another minute, the amount of time it takes for the bread to rise, we would have hit level number 50. But here is the problem. I may have mentioned this before. By taking us out early, HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped the chemotherapy. Sometimes you have to stop therapy early because it can kill the patient. But the disadvantage is when you stop a treatment early, the cancer is still there. So the Chiddush Yerim says the thousands of years of Golus that we've gone through are because we couldn't last that other 190 years. Had we been able to stick it out another 190 years, we would have been purified. We would have gone to Eretz Yisrael. We would have had a Beis HaMikdash. There would have been a Geula. That would have been it. But Nebuch, Hashem had to truncate the process. The Chiddush HaRim says. And therefore, we need thousands of years to get it out of us, so to speak, till we'll be Zeicha for Geula. Okay? So, now, another thing in the Haftarah that's very significant is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing his love for us, so he says a difficult pasuk, but a pasuk that actually is a very, very important source of a major principle. And the pasuk says, "Bisasa'a bishalcha tirivena." Okay, so the word sasa'a means a basket, or maybe her basket, it depends if there's a mapik here or not, with her basket, as she sends it forth, shall she quarrel, shall she fight. So it's hard to make sense of those words. The words indicate that some she, it doesn't say who the she is, that she will send forth and fight with her basket. So what does that pasuk mean? So Chazal say that this is the source of the yesod called Mida Keneged Mida. Mida Keneged Mida means the way God behaves towards someone, for good or for bad, is the way they behave. In other words, Hashem gives you measure for measure. In Mitzrayim, it was very clear that because Paro wanted to destroy the Jewish people by water, Hashem destroyed his nation by water, which is Kriyas Yamsuf. So Chazal say the makor of Mida Keneged Mida, the Pasuk, so to speak, is this idea that the Mida Sadin fights back with the basket that it was given. The basket that the person gave is the basket they're going to get back. That's Besasa, Beshalcha, Terivena. The basket it sends forth is the is what it will fight with. Okay? So this is the makor of Mida Keneged Mida, and that's why the pasuk ends Haga Barucha Hakasha Biyam Kadim, and therefore God will smite the water with his harsh wind from the east. Now this Kriyas Yamsuf occurred by the harsh eastern winds and the like. Now this is a bit of a, again, Yeshayahu is very poetic, and it's hard to parse the exact phrases and the exact words, but most of the Nevuah does talk about the drunkenness, a kind of a new thing. He talks about the leaders of the 10 tribes as being filled with wine, smitten with wine, lounging in beds of luxury, pouring oil and fats, so to speak, on their heads, which is normally how you anoint a king, but they're just doing it for their own self-aggrandizement. And it talks about the fact that they are intoxicated, they don't have the capacity for judgment. And the pasuk then says, all of their tables are filled with vomit, with no place for anything else. Now, this pasuk, ki kol shulchanos malu keitzoa b'li makom, trying to call your attention to famous psukim. This is a pasuk that is actually quoted in Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos says, how do you know that if three people are sitting at a table and they're not learning Torah, it is as if they participated in idolatry? Shene'emar, ki kol shulchanos malu keitzoa, their tables are filled with vomit, b'li makom, which means, on one hand it means without a place, but makom is also a name for God, that when God is not mentioned at the table, then it is a despicable, disgusting place. So b'li makom is a pun. It means there's no place for anything else, but it means there's no God. Now, of course, let me just tell you that there is a heter the Achronim give us, and that is, if you recite Birchas Hamazon, benching counts as Divrei Torah, because you have the pasuk V'achalta V'savata Uveirachta. So at least B'diyevet. Of course, if you neither say Torah nor bench, then you're really in trouble. But at least if you bench B'diyevet, you're Yotzei the Inyan of Divrei Torah. By the way, the Bali Musar say another Nakuda that's interesting. The Lashon of Pirkei Avos is Shleisha Sheyashvu V'ein Beinehem Divrei Torah. Now, three people are sitting and there's no Torah exchanged between them. So the Bali Musar say, it doesn't say they're not learning, even if everybody is learning, but they're learning by themselves. I learn my thing, you learn your thing, but there's no interactivity, there's no connection. Because Torah is also a vehicle of Avas Yisrael, and a vehicle of Achdus, and a vehicle of sharing. So even that is considered to be a very bad thing. There needs to be an exchange. That's why, it's an interesting question. Sometimes at Chasanas, people come with their own little sefer. Again, in an ideal world, again, I mean, I'm not giving anyone Musar. I mean, I would sometimes do the same thing, and halvai that we shall take a sefer and learn. But in an ideal world, the Torah would be shared. It wouldn't just be, I do my thing, you do your thing. but there would be some communication, some interactivity. Okay, now then, the Navi turns into what is somewhat bitter humorous, and he says, when you have a drunken bunch of people who are hedonists sitting around enjoying luxuries, who are so disoriented through liquor that they can't even think, that's how he's describing it. Esmi yoredeya, who is going to teach knowledge? Esmi yavin shmua, who will understand learning? Gemulei mechalav, children who have been weaned from their mother's milk, they haven't started drinking yet, they stopped nursing. Atike mishadayim, those who have been torn away from the breast, meaning the basic idea is that the only people who aren't drunk in this society are little kids. But are they yet ready to paskin and teach Torah? And then it goes on and says, Ki tzav letzav, tzav letzav, kav lekav, kav lekav, ze'ersham, ze'ersham. It's talking about the fact that people had a very casual attitude towards Yiddishkeit. They took a little mitzvah here and a little mitzvah here. In other words, they like, let's say, lighting Shabbos candles, but they don't like the malachith part. They enjoy making a Seder, but they don't want to clean the house for Pesach. So tzav letzav, they take this commandment, that line they like, that line they don't like. Ze'er shum, ze'er, a little bit there, a little bit there. Yeah. 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 Well, once a year, everything is okay. You know, I mean, the basic idea is that if Purim is your out of norm experience, and we'll talk about Purim when we get closer to it, then Baruch Hashem, that's not your normal life. When it becomes your normal life, then it becomes very bad. Then on Purim, you got to stop drinking. You know. I mean, basically, you know, one time a year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we celebrate. Well, I will tell you this. Drinking on Purim is not supposed to be wild drunkenness. It's supposed to release inhibitions. If you've seen like Choshev Talmidei Chachamim who drink on Purim, and they do drink on Purim, you see, if anything, they say more Torah, they're more open, they're mechadesh, all sorts of things. The concept of a 14-year-old vomiting in the street is absolutely not correct. There's no way a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants people to do that, and you know, unfortunately, it gets abused. Listen, kids, sometimes adults as well, gets sometimes out of control, and that's why there are many yeshivas that don't allow the kids to drink at all, simply because, putting aside the legal drinking age, which in Israel we don't pay that much attention to, but maybe we should. But there are many Rosh Yeshivas who feel that if teenagers don't understand what the simcha is about, then it's a very bad thing for them to do. And you see over here, if anything, you see over here, you're correct, this could be an Alcoholics Anonymous ad. You see over here a direct criticism of how alcohol destroys your judgment and you become spoiled, you're unable to think, you disregard the Nevi'im, you don't listen to Musar. Of course, it's a chicken and egg question here. The Pasuk does not make it clear. Is it the drinking that made them bad? Or because they were bad, they turned to the drinking. The normal context of the Nevi'im is the second way, actually. That because they didn't care about Hashem, they turned to partying and drinking and the like. But once again, what's interesting is, both in all three versions of the Haftorah, what's interesting is there's a dark side in all of them. Meaning, in the Parshios of Yetzias Mitzrayim, where you expect the message would be liberation, redemption, and downfall of Paro, in all three Haftorahs, there are messages about our need to do tshuva, our need to be righteous, our need to serve Hashem. And that's a very important point. Next week's Haftorah, for example, is all about the destruction of Mitzrayim. That's all it emphasizes. This week's Haftorah is about our accountability. And it really reminds us, once again, that there is no meaningful freedom without submission to the yoke of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we see this in the very holiday cycle. You know, we link two Yamim Tovim. We link Pesach and Shavuos through the ritual of counting of the Omer. And Shavuos doesn't even have a calendar date. Shavuos doesn't have to be the 6th of Sivan. Shavuos is defined in the Torah as the 50th day from counting the Omer on the second day of Pesach. In the time when the calendar was not fixed, that could be the 5th of Sivan, that could have been the 6th, that could have been the 7th. It's only today the calendar is fixed, it's always going to be the 6th. But Shavuos does not have a calendar date because it is not a separate Yom Tov. It is day 51 of Pesach. Right, so if you tell your boss you're taking off for Pesach, you know, you can come in after Shavuos and the like. And the reason is because Shavuos is not a separate holiday. Shavuos is the purpose of Pesach. Pesach is freedom. But what is freedom unless there is submission to the will of Hashem? And that's why Chazal say the korban of Pesach is barley, the omer, which is animal food, and the korban of Shavuos is wheat, shtei halechem, which is human food. Because freedom without Torah is just animal liberation. With Torah, it's human dignity. So once again, it could be, ultimately, all three Haftorahs are emphasizing not just the gift of freedom, but the responsibility of those who were redeemed to live their lives a certain way. And maybe, now it's interesting, why next week's Haftorah doesn't take that tack? Next week's Haftorah is all about the downfall of Egypt and the liberation of Am Yisrael. But in this week's, or maybe because we're beginning the second Chumash, this week's Haftorah, all three Haftorahs emphasize the achrayas of Bnei Yisrael to live lives that make them worthy of Hashem's redemption. Okay, so we'll see you next week. Have a good week.